Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jose Oliva. I'm on the board of the Chicago Food Policy Action Council. I am also at staff at the HEAL Food Alliance. And I have the honor today of introducing Naveena Khanna to you all. Before I do that, though, how many of you enjoyed lunch? Yeah, it's good lunch, huh? Some people are still enjoying lunch. That's great. This is a model, I think, that we're going to continue to do here for the following food policy summits, of having the lunch be provided by local vendors and especially the worker co-ops and other local food distributors and value-added folks. So I'm glad that people liked it. So again, my name is Jose Oliva. I'm at the HEAL Food Alliance. And I just want to tell a quick story about how I met Naveena. So I am the former co-director of the Food Chain Workers Alliance, which is a national coalition of food worker organizations, farm workers all the way up to restaurant workers and everything in the middle. And one of our members was the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. I don't know if any of you know who they are, the farm worker group. And I remember going to one of their events, and I remember seeing Naveena sort of running around, like just helping with stuff. And then I remember going to another event in Philadelphia with some a food policy, sort of a food policy summit type thing. And I remember seeing Naveena running around helping. And then it like dawned on me, wow, this woman is just like everywhere. And she's always helping. She's always, you know, not like in the forefront. She's not taking credit for anything. She's in the background doing the hard work. A few years later, we at Food Chain Workers Alliance decided that, well, if we're going to actually win on some of these campaigns that our members are fighting to improve working conditions and wages for workers, we really need to bring along the food movement. So we started doing this thing that we were at the time calling the food blocks. And that meant that people from different food sectors would be brought together and that we would organize them to support food workers. And in one of those meetings that we had, I think it was at the Ford Foundation or something in New York, Naveena came. And I was like, oh, I know her. She's everywhere. She's always at the food things. And after she, you know, sat there patiently as we explained our theory of change and how we're going to bring together all these food movement organizations, and we're going to create this coalition of coalitions that are going to represent all of the food movement nationally. And then afterwards, she came up to me and very patiently said, you know, I've been actually doing that for the last year and a half. And here's a paper that I published, and it maps out the entire food movement. And it gives, and it still exists, and I would highly recommend that everybody here look at it. But gives you a sense of who's doing what in the food movement. And that gave me a sense of just how, not only how deeply committed she was, right, because she was involved in everything and in the background of things, but how smart she was and strategic she was in thinking about how she could put together something that was going to ultimately bring together all of these organizations in a formation that would ultimately have an impact in the entire food system. And not just in one piece of it or another. With that, I want to welcome, and she's been doing this for a very long time, for over 15 years, so I know a lot of you already know who Naveena is, but with that, I want to ask everyone to please give a warm welcome to Naveena Khanna.
That's also like the nicest intro I've ever gotten, so we could just leave it at that, what Jose said. but I will start just by telling y'all a little bit more about myself and my Family. So my family, word to your motherland, my family is from Punjab, which some folks might know is a region, Punch means five. It's named for its five rivers, which are flowing from the Himalayas down into the soil. And Punjab is known for being a really fertile agricultural region, as you can imagine, with five rivers flowing through it. And when I think about the Punjab that my ancestors lived in, I imagine their brown hands cultivating the soil, the kinds of diverse crops that they might have grown. But as some of you might also know or have heard about Punjab, it's the main site where the Green Revolution happened in the 1960s. Who's heard of the Green Revolution? Cool. I'm glad to see that most of y'all have heard of it. And as you know, this was the bringing in of chemical pesticides and fertilizers and production techniques that used hybridized seeds and monoculture to grow food instead. The idea behind it was that it was going to solve this quick fix for famine. But in reality, what it's done is it's decimated the soil, and it's polluted the waterways, and it's pushed people off of the land. So thousands, if not millions of people have been displaced from Punjab. Its rivers are sucked dry, and it has some of the highest cancer rates in the country, if not the world. So they call the train that goes to the nearest hospital the cancer train. But it's that same mentality, those same chemical pesticides, the same fertilizers, the same mentality of extraction and exploitation of people and of land, and that disconnect of people to land that is driving our entire food system, right? Whatever part we look at, and most parts of the world are facing this same kind of extraction and exploitation. So in Punjab specifically, we can look at what's happened over the last 50 years. But that's not a unique story. And if we look here in the U.S., we can see that a lot of the roots of our current food system go back 500 years or more, right? Where in this same ideology that allowed extraction and exploitation of land, of life, of labor, is what led to what we have today, right? So our food system here in the U.S. now is grounded on the mass displacement and genocide of peoples here, on the kidnapping and forced migration of people primarily from Africa to come and work here in the fields. And it's that same mentality that drives our food system today. So it leaves us here. We're here in Chicago, and what I'm understanding from even seeing this summit and the work that you all are doing together is that folks are coming together to address that, and that what's happening in Chicago mirrors a lot of what is happening in other parts of the country and in other parts of the world because of this same mentality that we face. So we see it show up in a lot of different ways, and I know that y'all have talked about different pieces of this, but we see it show up with the exploitation of workers, right? So right now, I think it's about 21.5 million people that work in the food system, and five of the eight worst-paying jobs are food system jobs. And what that means is that people who work in the food system end up being at least twice as dependent on government assistance to get their own food and for programs that many people depend on because of these low wages and wage theft and so on. And we all know that a lot of that is because of forced migration that folks have because of economic conditions and more, pushing them to come here and work in our food system where they may have actually had more control over their land and been able to use some of the same techniques that Punjabis used long ago. It's the same system that leads to those inequities, right? So worldwide, we see now that 1 in 7 people is hungry. And here in the U.S., it's 1 in 6 people are food insecure. And again, a lot of those are workers. Many producers also are making below poverty wages. So when we talk about eaters and people who have limited access to food, we're not just talking about folks outside of food production, right? We're talking about people all along the food chain that are being affected by this. And of course, the scale of what we're doing, this industrial agriculture is fueling things like climate change, as we know. We think that about a third of the greenhouse gases are caused by the food system at this point, and that's forcing migration too, right? So y'all remember this vivid image from a few years ago of folks from Syria forced to migrate, and people say that that's mostly because of climate change and because of the drought in Syria that folks were forced ultimately to migrate, and a lot of that collapse happened. Even the New York Times is talking about it, right? That we're here in the insect apocalypse and many other kinds of apocalypses. Most of the insect die-off is because of human production, right? Because of land being cleared for agriculture, also for development and things like that, but a lot of it is because of land being cleared for agriculture. And the mass amounts of insecticides and pesticides and things like that that we're using are killing off the bugs. Something like 40% of insect species are in decline right now. And there's an article that came out just a couple of days ago. This one's from last year, and if you haven't read it, you should definitely read it. But an article just came out a couple of days ago where experts around the world are saying that as the insect apocalypse happens, as this decline happens, we're facing a huge extinction, possibly the sixth mass extinction, and that our fate is completely intertwined with what happens to these insects. Right? We're not in this alone. We're all in it together. And we know it's not just humans, not just the bugs that are affected by these pesticides. Y'all remember this case, and there's many more that are happening because of these pesticides and fertilizers and things like that that are being used, that people, workers who are on the front lines of applying these kind of pesticides and fertilizers and things like that are feeling the very real health impacts of that too. So it's hitting all of us. So who's responsible? Who do we blame for all of this? What do we do about it? In Punjab, it's companies that did it. Here, it's corporations that are doing it. That in any sector that we look at in the food system, we can see that it's like four companies that control the beef industry, three that control the pork industry, just a couple that control poultry. We can see that with looking at brands. When we go to the supermarket, there's like five companies that control all of our supermarkets, and then almost everything that we have access to in stores is controlled by just a handful of companies. These are some outdated pictographs, so it's actually much more concentrated than this now. This one is actually, I think it's halved. It's like three companies that control almost 80% now of the seed industry. And we know that whoever controls our food, controls our seeds, controls our air, controls our water, that's who controls our lives, right? So it's up to us, knowing that our struggles are interlinked, knowing that our fates are interlinked, to reclaim that, to reclaim our land and our water and our seeds and our food and our systems and our relationships to land. So this is a picture of Oakland. It's an outdated picture of Oakland, too. But as you can see, there's a dividing line that splits Oakland, right? Grocery stores on one side of the 580, not on the other side. Does Chicago have a dividing line like that? Yeah, most cities have a dividing line like that, right? Where some people have access to things and others don't. It usually falls along race lines. It falls along poverty lines. It falls along lines of access to education and healthcare and more. These things are all interlinked, right? All of our struggles. So here we are, right? We're here in the face of climate change. We're here in the face of the sixth mass extinction. We're watching mass die-off. They call it the apocalypse. So the origins of the word apocalypse, though, mean the lifting of the veil, right? That the apocalypse in itself is the showing of things and things becoming more clear. And there's actually this great quote that some of you may be familiar with, Adrienne Marie Brown, who reminds us of that, that when we see all of these things happening on social media and the horrible stories of what's happening right now are going viral, that it's not anything new, right? It's something that's been happening for generations now, that it's getting uncovered. We're seeing what is actually the case with what our broken relationships with each other and with the land are doing to us, how they're harming our planet, and how that's interlinked. And that if our fate is interlinked with the insects and with people all over the world, then our struggle is also interlinked, right? And our survival is also interlinked and depends on each other. So we at HEAL took a lesson from Movement Generation, which some of y'all may know, and think about the work that we're doing to move away from the false solutions that are being put out by these companies in the mainstream towards what we really need in order to survive. So in the face of climate change and mass die-off, there are corporate narratives that will tell us that if we just create meat in a lab, we're all going to be okay. Or if we just pop a pill, then we're all going to be okay. Or if we just replace our gas-guzzling cars with electric cars, we're all going to be okay. But we know that none of how we got here is because of what individuals did, right? It's not about individual behavior change that's needed. There's whole systems at play, and there's this myth that capitalism tells us that if we were just better people, or more whole people, then we'd be better off in the world and we'd be happier people. If we just consume more, consume in a different way, we'd be better off. But the reality is that we're in community with each other. It's not just about these solutions that are replace one technology with another and keep us isolated and disconnected from the land and from each other. And I know y'all know that. I saw the t-shirts and the stickers that talk about how we're here for our land and our people and so on. But on the other side of those false solutions is what we know we really need, right? And some of the things that we know we really need are right relationship with land, that we need to be saving seeds, and we need those seed stories that have been held for generations and generations and thousands of years by indigenous folks who have stayed in the same place and have kept those seeds and kept their cultures alive for a long time despite conditions changing. And we know that we really need access to clean water, right? Public water, not privatized by companies. We really need to be in good relationship with each other. So how do we get there? The reality is that what we really need is not currently politically possible. Articles like what was in the New York Times, the insect apocalypse, helps people start to see the problem with what's happening and starts to make some of those false solutions less possible, right? It starts to seed this idea with all of us that we can do something more. If I had a hula hoop right now, I would be taking that middle circle and I would be pulling it further and further this way, because our job as movement folks is to make what we know we really need in terms of our own survival and our collective survival more and more politically possible. So some of the ways that I know you all are doing that together is by bridging sectors, right? Bringing folks together to make change. I saw that folks are having conversations around what it is for us to hold land collectively together, or how we create cooperatives together so that we're the ones that own things instead of it being these corporations that own things. And as we do that, as we see these conversations with each other, and as we work to build power together, that's how we make it more and more politically possible to do that. And I know that folks in this room are also organizing to hold more political leadership and hold more political power so that y'all are the ones that are actually making decisions for your city, for your community, for this land base. And that's what we do. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a little while for us to make the changes we all really need in order to survive. But just to say that, you know, the CIFPAC has been working closely with us at HEAL, and we've put together this platform for real food that brings together organizations like CIFPAC and others all over the country that are doing this kind of deep work on the ground to create something that ultimately transforms our whole system and brings our whole communities together to accelerate that transformative change. Knowing that our struggles are interlinked, knowing that our survival is dependent on each other, and that it's not just about as Jose said earlier, it's not just about one of our sectors or one organization or even one group of people's struggle, whether that's food workers or farmers or folks living in an urban neighborhood, but that all of these things are interdependent on each other. And we need to take care of all of these things as we're trying to transform our food systems together. So we're working to divest from the corporations that control the whole industry and reinvest those dollars in producers and worker-owned cooperatives that are aligned with our values and that invest real resources in the folks who have been most exploited by the systems that we've been talking about that have persisted for hundreds of years now. And it's going to take all of us, right? Y'all are already coming together across sectors. It's going to take all of us, the diverse skills and resources and strengths that we have and the different approaches that we have. And some of y'all may have seen this meme that's been going around and this amazing video that's been going around of Coyote and Badger. Kind of amazing, right? But I just want to like show us that little video clip for a second, if I can find it and pull it up. So check this out. That's the coyote waiting for its badger friend. And they go off through the tunnel together. So indigenous people and scientists for years have known that coyotes and badgers hunt together. So that's the first recorded coyote and badger walking together through a man-made tunnel. But they hunt together, and they hunt together because they each bring different skills to the hunt. So one of them, coyote, is really good at chasing things, right? And can like get the things that are on the land and chase them. And often when things are being chased on land, they then go underground. And who's really good at getting things underground? Badger. But when badgers start chasing things underground, they go to the surface, and then coyote can get them. So what they've seen over time is that while it doesn't always end up that both coyote and badger get a meal out of things, the likelihood is that at least one of them will get a meal if they work together. So I feel like that's a pretty good metaphor for us to think about how we bring our different skills and strengths and resources to the table, knowing that each other's win is also our win because we are stronger together, right? By using those different resources, by using our different relationships, by using our different privileges, what we have access to, our different stories, our cultures, and our different approaches, right? So some of us are actually going to be the ones that produce the food, and some of us are going to be the ones that teach people about it. Some of us are going to make art to make it beautiful and help people imagine what's possible. There's so many different ways for us to be in movement together. Some of us are going to take direct action and take down the systems that exist. We're all working together towards something that is more beautiful than anything we have imagined yet. And it's something that we can all do together. So I will leave it at that.
Great. Thank you so much, Navina, for taking the time out today and sharing the awesome stories of your background and the work that the awesome collaboration work that's going on with the HEAL Food Alliance. The Food Policy Council is honored to be a member of the HEAL Food Policy, the HEAL Food Alliance. It'd be great to, and if anybody else, any other organizations here should connect with Jose and Navina about possibly getting some other folks in the Chicago area to join. That would be wonderful to think about our larger power. So we're going to transition to the 1 o'clock sessions now, the now 1:15 sessions. So we're going to have, in this room, we'll have livestock conversations on this side of the room, and the regional folks who are thinking from the regional food other regional food policy councils from the region or elsewhere will be on this side of the room. And then the SNAP conversation is going to be, benefits conversation is going to be in the Oak Room upstairs. And then co-op worker cooperative conversation is going to be in the Solarium. And then a conversation about research and extend with universities and extension is going to be in the music room. So again, thank you all, and we'll go ahead and move on to the next session and try to get started. Thank you.